The Common Good on KFSK is brought to you by the Petersburg Community Foundation, an affiliate of the Alaska Community Foundation. The Petersburg Community Foundation is devoted to improving the lives of the young, the elderly, and vulnerable populations, as well as creating recreation, education, and safety programs. The Petersburg Community Foundation, making grants to local nonprofits through a permanent endowment. More information at petersburgcf.org.
Well, good morning and welcome to The Common Good here on KFSK Petersburg. It's about 31 minutes past the hour. This is Hannah Flohr, and I am here with two guests today to talk about landslide warning systems in Southeast Alaska. I have Lisa Bush on the line. She is Executive Director of Sitka Sound Science Center in Sitka, as well as Robert Lempert. He researches risk management with the RAND Corporation. He's also on the phone from California. Thanks for being here, both of you.
Thanks, Hannah. It's great to be here.
Yeah, good to be here.
So I wanted to talk about this landslide warning system that you, along with many other people, worked on in Sitka, and now you're working on a whole series of landslide warning systems in Southeast Alaska. Excuse me. Lisa, can you start off just by telling me a little bit about the landslide, the fatal landslide in Sitka in 2015 that was sort of the initiating event for this warning system?
Sure. So in 2015, we had, in August, we had a lot of rain all at once, and we had a really big landslide that killed three of our beloved community members and destroyed a whole lot of property all over town. And that same day, different entities flew the island and flew up to Chichikov. There had been 40 different landslides all around the island that day. So it was a big, just sort of flooding event and, lots of landslides. And it seems silly to say this now, especially since we've had so many landslides, we've had two other deadly landslides in our region in recent years, but we honestly didn't think that much about landslides before 2015 as a community. We, like other Southeast Alaska communities, think a lot about tsunamis and earthquakes, and we have a tsunami warning system. But we just, until 2015, we just really didn't worry about landslides that much.
Mm-hmm. And landslides are really becoming common in Southeast Alaska, and that's partly due to more rainfall from climate change. Why is it, besides just the rainfall, why are landslides so common in Southeast Alaska?
Well, we have a lot of steep terrain, post-glacial terrain, and we have a lot of rain. And those two things mean that we have a lot of landslides. And when I say we didn't worry about landslides in the past, we didn't, but the geologic record shows that we have had landslides in our region over the centuries.
Okay.
So not that landslides are a brand new thing. They're absolutely not a brand new thing. But I think, there's sort of different reasons why we're paying more attention to it now. One is that people have started to develop up the hillsides. And some of our work, when we talk to Indigenous elders and people who can pass on native stories and things like that, demonstrates or shows that for the most part, Indigenous people lived close to their food source, which was close down by the water, whether that was the ocean or the rivers. And it was really, colonization where people started to move up the hillside and build houses up the hillside and put themselves in harm's way in terms of landslides.
Okay, yeah. So it's a combination of things where there is perhaps a little bit more rainfall, but there's also people who are more likely to be in harm's way from those landslides. Okay.
Yeah, and also I just want to say one thing about the rainfall. We are having generally a bit more rainfall, but the difference that the National Weather Service and all the climate scientists are telling us, and Southeast Alaska residents are experiencing more intense rainfall. Mm. So longtime residents know, you know, October and November, we used to get a lot of rain. It would rain, you know, every day. We would expect that kind of horizontal rain. And now we're getting these big, intense rain events starting much earlier in the year. So that's a big difference.
Okay, that's a good distinction. Thank you. So I'm curious, I want to know about how the landslide warning system came to be after that landslide. And, you know, you have talked a little bit about how community anxiety played a part in developing that warning system. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Just to back up a tiny bit, so the Sitka Sound Science Center, we're a nonprofit, and our mission is science research and science education for coastal Alaska. So we're also a field station, which, if you don't know what a field station is, it's that nexus between research and education. So we do a lot of connecting of researchers and the community and a lot of community engagement. So that's just a little bit of background of us, in our organization. But the way the landslide warning research came about was as soon as the landslide happened, our organization wanted to help in some way. And we weren't the people on the search and rescue team, you know, looking for people and recovering the roads and things like that. What we did, which is what we know how to do, is we could gather scientific resources. So we reached out to anyone who we thought would know more about landslides than we did, which wouldn't be hard to do because we didn't have a lot of landslide expertise in Sitka. So we reached out to the University of Alaska, other universities on the West Coast that do a lot of landslide research, like University of Oregon and Oregon State. We reached out to agencies like U.S. Geologic Survey, the U.S. Forest Service, the National Park Service, social scientists who study disaster preparedness and response. And we created this little group on the telephone. This was before Zoom was so popular. And we just met. We met a few times a week in the beginning. And we just asked the scientists, tell us what we need to know as a community. Tell us what we should be thinking about in terms of landslides. And the scientists were awesome. They just right away said, yes, we want to help. And eventually we got all these scientists together and we sat them down and they were sort of, throwing ideas around about what kinds of, things they know about landslides. And at this point, this was maybe 18 months after the landslide had happened. And in our community, there was a tremendous amount of anxiety about the rain. So people, every time it rained, people were afraid to, they didn't know what they should be afraid to do. You know, should we be afraid to send our kids to school? Should we be afraid to go hunting, walk in the woods, that sort of thing? And so essentially what we said to the scientists is, what scientific questions can you answer that will make our citizens feel less anxious? And the scientists were great. They said, well, if we knew how much rain had fallen, if we knew how much rain was going to fall, if we knew how much precipitation there was at altitude, if we knew how much moisture there was in the soil or what the pore pressure was, we could start to create a model that could develop into a landslide warning system. And Robert Lempert knows way more about models and this sort of thing than I do. But that was the idea. And then the scientists started to say things like, hey, I work for the State Division of Geology and Geophysical Sciences, the DGGS. We have a weather station. We could put that up in the mountains. And, the National Weather Service said, you know, we're doing forecasting. And the USGS said, well, we have some ways of monitoring soil moisture and stream height. And so we kind of brought all these resources together to start to create a model, and we increase with the RANS Corporation and with Sitka Tribe of Alaska and a whole bunch of other partners, we got a grant from the National Science Foundation to start creating this model.
Okay. And then, you know, I want to talk a little bit about how the system is tailored to Sitka specifically. But first, I'd like to pivot just a little bit before getting to the specifics. And Robert, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about the work that you do with the RAND Corporation with risk and deep uncertainties and how that ties into your work with this warning system.
Great. Yeah. So first off, so RAND is a nonprofit, nonpartisan public policy research organization. So we do, cutting edge research, but try to bring it in and work with communities, make it policy impactful. We got involved with the Sitka warning system. We actually had a former AmeriCorps volunteer who had been in Sitka and then had come to work at RAND. And when she heard about the landslide, she said, Sitka is this amazing community. This might be a really good opportunity, to work with them. And RAND, my work and then many of my colleagues is very much focused on helping organizations at all levels, and much of our work is for the federal government, state governments, large regional organizations, to try to assess and manage their risks, understand what risks they face and what are the best approaches to managing them. And my particular focus, which is somewhat a little bit less relevant to what we found in Sitka, but is situations where the risks are really hard to assess, that we have faced really deep uncertainties and the challenge is, we have lots of data, we have lots of models, but we're sure to be surprised. And how does one do come up with good risk management strategies under those situations? A lot of what we do is both, bring in the science and develop models, and we'll talk more about that in a second. But a key piece of assessing and managing risks is bringing together the science, but also the local context, because risk is very much something that people and communities feel and experience, and that just coming in with one perspective is sort of misses the boat. And good risk management really focuses on understanding what people are concerned about, how they think about the environment they live in, and then trying to connect that to information that can help them do a better job of living with, managing risks. And Lisa really emphasized this idea that people have become scared of the rain, and just helping them understand what they can do to make their lives safer, to reduce that sort of anxiety.
And what does that look like when it's applied to the actual warning system that you are developing?
The warning system itself, we went through a long process of community engagement, which we can chat about, but which actually changed our conception of what this warning system would look like. But what we came out with at the end is essentially a web-based app, so sitkalandslide.org, which has basically just a high-level warning level, high, medium, or low, which you see right when you go onto the app, which tells people in Sitka what the current landslide risk is, and then what it is looking forward up to about 3 days out into the future. And then it has all sorts of places where you can drill down and learn more about what the model is doing, what the historical precedent is for, what does it look like, and what do we know about situations when risk was low, when it was medium, when it was high in the past, and then a little introduction to what causes landslides, the reasons behind them, some of the stuff that we were discussing earlier in the call, what what you can do to make yourself and your family safer. What do you do if you see a medium or a high level of landslide risk? Some of the stories and the traditions of the Sitka Tribe of Alaska relevant to landslides. So a whole bunch of different information. And then we did a variety of training sessions and other outreach to bring this out into the community.
And why did you decide to develop this app as opposed to, you know, like an alarm system that is used for tsunamis or what have you?
Yeah, no, a great question, because we very much went in to this effort with the notion that, you know, Sitka's got a tsunami warning system, which has a siren, and the fire chief, looks at information coming in from the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Association, you know, the various of your federal agencies, looked at his own experience and decides whether or not to pull the warning system. And it turned out landslides are really different, at least landslides in Sitka are really different. First off, you know, the signal is a little bit noisier in the sense that the warning system can say that there's, probably going to be a landslide. You know, this rainstorm is intense enough to cause a landslide, but it can't say where. So the landslide might be, you know, into the town. It might be next to the town. So as opposed to a tsunami, which is, you know, much more, you know, if it's coming, it's going to affect the entire town. And then not all the town is equally exposed to landslides, as Lisa was talking about. It's generally, though not always, the structures which are further up the hill. So, you know, pulling a siren for the whole community didn't make sense. And then finally, we very much heard in talking to people that, you know, people have different risk preferences is what the scientists call it. But, you know, I mean, whether or not, you know, some people would be very adverse to evacuating every time there was a really intense rainstorm. Others really want to play it safe and you know, want to be someplace else on a night, maybe where it's raining really hard. So the app approach, as opposed to the siren approach, is designed to give everybody information that they can use to make what they see as the best decision for themselves and their family.
Yeah, and I just also want to jump in here and say that I think, too, the landslide, in developing the landslide warning system and all the work that we did with community engagement and community workshops, we very much wanted the landslide, this kind of community-based landslide warning system, to reflect the values of community members. So this is not unique to Sitka. It's very Alaskan. You know, community members didn't want the government telling them what to do. And they wanted to be able to be independent, like Robert said, and make their own choices based on, you know, their feelings of risk and what they were willing to live with and that sort of thing. But and then the other part of it was that the government, like the city fire hall, they were reluctant to tell everyone what to do. I mean, I'm just emphasizing what Robert already said, but that they didn't want to press the button kind of thing, especially because this is an emerging science and they didn't have a lot of confidence in, you know, well, are we going to be able to pull this off and how accurate is it going to be and that sort of thing. So that was part of it.
Yeah. There's a lot of trust building, you know, both with the community, the public officials and so forth through the whole process.
I was going to ask you about that. It sounded like there were a lot of conversations that you had to build that trust. Can you talk a little bit about how you approached finding out what the community needed and how you went about building that trust?
Great. Lisa, do you want to start or should I dive in?
Yeah, you can jump in. You can start. Sorry, Robert.
Okay, great. Yeah. We basically had a very multi-layered approach. The formal part of the process consisted of a series of what we call co-design workshops. And the idea of co-design is bringing both the scientific experts together and then community members together, and everybody works together as equals to come up with the system. Everybody brings their knowledge and the collective, and the overall process is much greater than the sum of the parts. But so the first one was basically what we call the scoping workshop, and we talked about warning systems idea. We did what's called a visioning exercise. We asked people to imagine that it was 2025. I think it's the year we used, 2025, and Sitka is known throughout Southeast and throughout more broadly about having a great landslide system. You know, your friend comes to town and says, "Tell me about this thing." And we had everybody, you know, write down stories about what they would tell their friend in 2025 about how wonderful this landslide system was. And from that, we extracted, you know, what did people really care about, and what did they envision who doing what? And so that helps us structure the process. We then came back, I think about a year later, with an initial design, and we laid that out for people, and then played various games which were focused on letting people play through some of the key design choices that the landslide system faced. And so one of them was on this issue that led to the putting it as an app, but we brought in some data that showed rainfall events with and without, which had and had not caused landslides, and we had people draw thresholds between them. You know, if you had to give a warning, where, you know, how heavy would the rain have to be to give a warning? And the data was such that, you know, you were either going to give warnings with lots of false alarms or give warnings where there's sometimes be a landslide without having given a warning. And then we had decks of cards depending on when people had, where people had drawn their line, and they had to draw a card, and it would basically say, you know, you're the fire chief and you didn't give a warning and there was a landslide and someone got hurt. And, or, you know, it's, you've given, this is the fifth warning you've given this this year and nothing happened, and you'd have to stand up and, you know, tell people, justify why you had made your choice. And so we played that game. And so then we had a discussion about how to design the landslide system, and then which, you know, got people to really engage with some of the challenges. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was we had a pretty close to final design, and then we discussed how to disseminate to the community. In between that, we had all sorts of public meetings. Lisa's just a fabulous organizer, so, you know, members of our team would show up in Sitka, and we would have, coffees with people, a lot of people to talk to. We would be at public meetings. We would sit in the coffee shops and say, you know, the landslide warning system team is there between 10 and noon. Come talk to them. We had scientists in the schools program. There's a scientist in residence program at the Sitka Sound Science Center. So there's lots of ways we had all these informal conversations with the community as well.
Mm. I
think importantly too that we had, you know, we have this nonprofit, the Sitka Sound Science Center, which kind of started out as a trusted source for the community. We don't know. We don't have geologists. Well, we didn't at the time. We didn't have geologists on the payroll at the Science Center, but I think the community trusted us to kind of walk through this whole process, and bringing in scientists who we trusted and who we had vetted, and then training the scientists on how to work and navigate in rural and tribal Alaska, giving them science communication training, and then putting them, like Robert said, in these, you know, pretty much, you know, kind of standard Southeast Alaska, small town Southeast Alaska things, you know, trivia nights and sitting at the coffee shop and grocery store and things like that.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the threshold of of risk where if you know, there could be the potential for false alarms, and there could also be the potential for a landslide that had not been predicted. And I think the repercussion for a landslide that hasn't been predicted is pretty apparent. What are the repercussions of those false alarms?
Well, just that the community starts to not trust the system. And that's one of them anyway. That's kind of a big one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that and just disruption to daily life. I mean, if you're someone who doesn't want to send your kids to school when there's a high landslide risk, which can be a totally reasonable thing to do, but, you know, you end up not sending them to school for, you know, a number of days in a year and nothing happens, I mean, it starts to disrupt your life, or if you need to, you know, if you sleep someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really the balance between how much does this disrupt your life, and as Lisa said, I mean, if it starts to disrupt your life a lot and nothing happens, you tend to disbelieve it. You think the system is crying wolf. But
right.
As I say, I mean, the warning levels that we came up with, and it turned out the data was really crisp for Sitka, which may or may not be that way in other towns in the southeast. But there's just a regime. Low risk is that there's no recorded landslides with this level of rain.
Mm-hmm.
High risk is that there have always been lots of landslides around Sitka with this level of rain, but not necessarily in town. But, you know, with that level of rain, you will definitely be able to go find a place that there was a landslide, you know, after the storm. And then a region in between where there have sometimes been landslides in and around Sitka with that level of rain. So there's basically, you know, your okay region, there's going to be a landslide someplace region, and then one where it's in between.
Okay. And so using that that alarm system with the different levels of risk is really useful, because then people can make their own decisions and they don't
exactly
have that sort of fatigue that comes with evacuating over and over and over with a perceived false evacuation when there wasn't a landslide, you know, 10 times in a row or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And times where they know they can feel comfortable, and mm-hmm. times when they know that they're either evacuating or you know, taking a calculated risk.
I'm curious how you know that this warning system is working.
That's a good question.
We've
gone up to medium risk twice since we've started, and each time there was a landslide, but it didn't destroy property, and it didn't kill people, and it wasn't right in it wasn't right in town. So, and just completely anecdotally, I don't know of anyone who evacuated when we went up to medium risk.
Oh, interesting. Huh.
So I don't know, you know, just, I mean, people might have, but I don't know if anybody did. And I hate to sound like a classic scientist, but more studies are needed to know if this is reducing anxiety and how it is making people feel in terms of the community. And
mm-hmm.
and then of course, you know, the next one is it making people safer?
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Just to throw in it, as a scientist, we actually had done surveys at the start of the project, and with the notion that we were going to do surveys after the project. But there was this pandemic between our initial surveys and, you know, by the time the landslide system went up, and the community was in many ways so different. No one knew what a dashboard was before,
right?
Before the pandemic, and everybody knew what dashboards were after the pandemic. So it was just we had hoped to do some evaluation so we could give you a crisp answer to your question, but as sometimes happens, events got in the way.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, we are technically out of time. I'm going to push it another minute because I just really want to ask this one final question, which is, you're now working to set up landslide warning systems in 6 different towns around Southeast. And, I am curious whether you see possibilities for this particular community based approach to warning systems, for other natural disasters, for other climate based disasters here in Alaska, nationally? Is this a thing that is potentially going to be applied in other situations? It's a big question.
I think we understand this in Southeast Alaska because we have such tight communities, and we understand how communities work in a healthy way, that you gotta involve the community in developing these kind of warning systems. And it's gotta reflect community values and community members' sense of risk and where and what we want to have warning systems about. So I hope it could be a model for other things. Of course, every kind of natural hazard is different, and the prediction is different. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, the hope and the dream here is that these sorts of processes will get picked up and prove useful in many places. This work that we've been talking about has been funded by the U.S. government National Science Foundation. But the hope is that, this can be turned into, practices, trainings and stuff so that it can be done, more broadly, outside the context of, a scientific grant. So yeah, we would very much hope this can be expanded, which is really one of the points of this new project where we're going from one community to six.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm excited to hear about that project with those six communities. We're out of time. Thank you both so much. Excuse me. Thank you both so much for joining me. And
much for your interest, Hannah. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks so much, Hannah. This was great. Thanks.
The Common Good on KFSK is brought to you by the Petersburg Community Foundation, an affiliate of the Alaska Community Foundation. The Petersburg Community Foundation is devoted to improving the lives of the young, the elderly, and vulnerable populations, as well as creating recreation, education, and safety programs. The Petersburg Community Foundation, making grants to local nonprofits through a permanent endowment. More information at petersburgcf.org.